Once again, to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. And there is she. Oh, Holly was great. Whoa. Yeah, that's from called Sea of Love, recorded down here in Laguna Beach. And several years ago, that's on the From Andromeda with Love. And that's Holly Penfield. She plays the girl from outer space, the Pleiadian or Andromedan or whatever you want to call her. She's that part in the rock opera, and that's one of the latter songs. She wrote that song driving home up to Hollywood one night after working in the studio all day long, which means starting when we record. I guess we start at probably around 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning and go till 2 or 3 in the morning. Then she goes home to Hollywood for a little while. She comes back down here at 6. That's what she was doing. Sometimes she stayed, but most of the time she drove back. Her husband at the time was in town. He was traveling all over the world playing his music. That's what happens when you're a musician married to one. Anyway, we had a great show Saturday night, and we're going to continue on with the flavor of the receptor. We're going to have some more of Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show from 1984. We're going to be talking about receptors and gemstones, and I do believe that he's actually queuing up over there now. I sort of heard him. I think he was talking to Jim. You know how that Dr. Bell is. So he's over there, and I think at any moment we're going to start hearing him. And we're going to hear Dr. Bell from, it's like two Dr. Bells. There's one 20 years ago and the one today. And I think the second segment's going to be kind of interesting. It's going to be on the initiations of the Great Pyramid. Kind of spice it up. So we have 2 half-hour segments from previous times. And I wonder if Dr. Bell is ready to go yet. We'll find out in a minute here. You never know with him what's going on.
The time for the hour, your top
alternative. It sounds like Jim coming in.
Health, Science, and Energy Show.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
Now, live from Laguna Beach, California, here is Dr. Fred Bell.
Here I am.
Good morning, Dr. Bell.
Good morning, Jim. How are you doing in the weather?
Hi, it's Dr. Bell. Good morning, Dr. Bell.
I do, too. It's a good day to sleep.
Well, I
Dr.
can't
Bell
do that,
loves
but
to sleep.
I
don't get much of that anymore.
The air clearing out.
Turn it over to you, listener.
And, I just like it.
Yeah, it's really pretty today, I have to admit. I have a sunroof on my house here, you know, a plastic one, or a moonroof or something, and I like to sit look at the sky and watch the water drops hit it, land on it, you know?
Yeah.
It's fun. So what'd you do this weekend? Anything exciting?
Not really. I took it easy. After 5 days of being exposed to the kinds of information I'm exposed to, I like to have a few days to digest the material.
Yeah, you cover enough subjects during the day, don't you?
That is the truth. Yes, indeed.
What's your favorite subject to cover? Anything in particular?
Well, you know, my favorite subject, of course, is what I consider the cosmic Watergate of the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and now 80s, and that is the UFO.
Oh, I know. Those are fun, aren't they?
And the cover-up that has gone on with the UFOs.
Oh, yeah. Have you got any new information on that?
Well, new information will be coming out December 10th when Larry Fawcett will be in town. Larry is the author of the book Clear Intent, The Government Cover-Up of the UFO Experience. In that book, Fred, Larry documents very well a case that happened in 1981 outside RAF Bentwaters, which was an Air Force base in England that houses both United States and British servicemen. And, he has documented evidence that a UFO landed outside there. Well, after the incident, there was, of course, an inquiry. He has gotten a hold of a cassette. There was an audio cassette that was done on site by the Air Force, and that is going to be played in public, hopefully for the first time. CNN is also involved in this, so.
Oh, that'll be fun.
It should be quite an evening.
What's the cassette about? I mean, is it the sound of the ship or the conversations or what?
Now, of course, I have not heard this. I have talked to Larry briefly on the air, and I know people have talked to Larry. It is part of the investigation that was going on, and then I understand it's quite dramatic because some of the servicemen start seeing UFOs while they are talking about them.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So it should be quite a dramatic evening.
Yeah, I watched that on Select TV. They've been playing that film about the Search of the Lost Ark with that Lucasfilm, you know? You've seen that one, right?
I know the film you're talking about, In Search of Noah's Ark.
No, not that one.
No?
The one, the science fiction one. The one that about Harrison Ford plays in where they're looking for the Lost Ark because Hitler's trying to find it because he was a great collector.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes, yes.
You've seen that one, right?
Yes.
How many times have you seen it?
Oh, I think I have about 3 or 4 times, I guess.
Yeah. You know, there's one scene in there that's really heavy because when they open the ark,
yes.
You know, remember that part where they open the box up?
Yes.
And all that energy comes out. Then they have that point where when they get done with the spirits flying all around, then they show the energy going up in the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge flying saucer sitting in the clouds that energy is dumping into. I mean, I've seen it every time I've seen the film, and I've tried to point it out to a few people. And I'm not even sure if he was aware of the fact that when they made that film, that effect came out. But if you look, you'll see that, you know, there was a flying saucer taken over. It's a very famous photograph. It was a picture of it taken over a house in Ohio several years ago. Very clear, sitting over a house. And it looked like about a 40-foot ship.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way the sun was shining on it, it outlined the silhouette of it. It was a fairly clear picture. Well, that one in the Raiders of the Lost Ark is exactly the same as that photograph.
Well, next time I see the motion picture, I'll look for that.
Yeah, it's supposed to depict the depict the heavens opening up and the energy coming up, the spent energy from the ark going into this shape. But if you look at the shape that it's dissolving into, it has a background of like a black sky because it was supposedly like thunder and lightning, isn't it? But you'll see an actual flying saucer there, and the energy is going right into it in that form. And, of course, that is one form that energy leaves the physical and goes into the astral plane anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a perfect thing. It was symbolic of the New Age. Because a lot of us, when we look at things, shapes, we relate them to that consciousness. For somebody else, but they might relate it to a hat. You know what I mean? Depending on what their consciousness is, how open they are and how far along they are in their personal development. People relate to shapes in different ways. And this is where the term mantram came from, because the mantram was a universal symbol that allowed people from all walks of consciousness to relate to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we've been talking about the receptor, and I wanted to talk about some of the gemstones, because I get a lot of calls here on which stones to use. But before I do that, I want to talk about a machine that I've developed here. It's called the nuclear disc. And what the nuclear disc does, it looks like a receptor with no top on it. And with no top on it, it can be used for many things. You know what I think I'll do is I got a noisy connection here. This happens when it rains. Let me reconnect the line here real quick.
Okay.
So we don't have a little static here.
All right, and let me remind everyone that they're listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science Energy and Energy Show on their Talk Alternative. 93.5 KFOX, Redondo Beach. We're here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, talking about a whole range of things that fall under the heading Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. 8 minutes now after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I tell you what, we're going to take a short time out. I think we've lost Dr. Bell. We're going to take a short time out for a message concerning one of Dr. Bell's fine products, and we'll be back with more of Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show after this.
The name is Excalibur. Excalibur, the world's finest nutritional supplement for the 80s that you've heard Dr. Fred Bell speak of so often, is now available to you at a super low price. Only $14.95. Excalibur is a synergistically formulated supplement that took years to develop and guarantees maximum assimilation within the body. Most supplements meet only part of your nutritional needs, but Excalibur is a full-spectrum nutritional supplement. Don't settle for second best when you can have Excalibur. Order today by calling area code 714-499-2603. That number, 499-2603. Or write to Excalibur, 891 Santa Ana Street, Laguna Beach, California, 92603. Remember, don't settle for a second best when you can have Excalibur.
Now, 10 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, once again, here is Dr. Fred Bell.
Yeah, that's a much better connection now. You know, one of these days they'll perfect the phone lines down here in Laguna Beach. They're still archaic, and everything out of town is a long-distance call.
Yes.
Anyway, the nuclear disc, which is a new product that we've just recently developed, is something that you can carry around. It's like having pyramid power in your pocket. And, you know, it's not to be worn like the receptor, which has to do with the body. This is something that you can use as a tool. You can carry it around in your pocket, and wherever you're in a restaurant or eating out, you know, wherever you are, and you want the advantage of pyramid power, you can just pull this device out of your pocket and put it to work for you. And it's kind of neat for several reasons. One is that I found that if you had a pain on your body, let's say some pain in the local area, like a cramp or something, if you go to the fingertips of the body and, you know, of your hands and respond to the proper ones, find the right fingertip for the pain area and massage this disc, what it does is, because it has these little, 144 little pyramid points on it, it breaks down any antigen buildup in the central nervous system and causes the energy flow to start happening again, which then in turn will oftentimes relieve pain. But as far as in a restaurant or something, when you go in, you ever go into a restaurant in some strange town, that horrible water taste?
Yes.
You know that one, right?
Yes, I think everyone does.
Yeah, well, what you do here is, because this will neutralize that, those chemicals, you put the disc right down in front of you on the table or the counter, and just place the water, the glass of water, right on top of the disc. And the disc, because it's flat, the pyramids are in a lowered surface, below the surface. So it acts like a grid. So you just put the water glass right down on there while you're eating your meal. And in a few minutes, the taste will become kind of bearable again. The same thing with juices. If you use it for like grapefruit juice or orange juice in the morning and it has a bitter taste, place the juice right down over the dip, and it'll neutralize it. Same thing with coffee. You can place coffee cups over it. And, you know, it has other effects too. Like, for example, if you're going to defrost food or something, you can just defrost it over the, you know, like two or three of these little discs. One would really be enough. Because the energy projects up above the disc about, I'd say half an inch. So that's adequate to get inside, put the energy inside of a cup of coffee or water or anything like that. And they're 24 karat gold plated, and the price on them is only $29.95. So it's not a real high ticket item around here. It's an expensive item, and one disc should last a lifetime. Probably everybody in the family would want one, and they're going to make great gifts, too, because it's time now. You know, one thing I believe in about Christmas time is giving gifts that help. I don't believe in giving fruitcake and candy at Halloween, all that garbage that's on the market just to spread the poison. I like to give away gifts like air ionizers, pyramids, vitamins. All these make great gifts, and they allow people to remember you in a good way, you know, for the years to come. So I think it's time that all our listeners out there start thinking about some of these new innovative products that we've got, because I think when you give a gift that's new age and higher consciousness, it's a statement about yourself. You're saying to these people that I care about you, you know, it's rather than that I'm part of the plastic Christmas spirit and I went down to the local sale at Bullock's or someplace and bought a bunch of stuff. It's not in that tradition at all. Anyway, getting into the gemstones of the nuclear receptor, people are always asking me how they can find out about which receptor to get and which stone to put in it. And first of all, you know, it's not that hard to tell. We have this little booklet that we have that has a little table in it, has arrows in it. And any of the stones that have the arrows going down or horizontally across the page indicate these are stones that can be worn for infinite lengths of time without any problems to the wearer. Now, the ones that have the arrows pointing up in the little table, in the little booklet, are ones that are a little bit strong and they will cause stimulation. One of the really strong ones, stones, is, of course, the diamond one. And the diamond is considered, just from a gemology state of view, or you know, it's the opposite of the pearl. Like the diamond is the sun and the pearl is the moon. And if you have a diamond or you wear a diamond, it does not harm your body at all to also carry somewhere on it a pearl. This has been considered by the ancients for years the thing to do, you know, especially when you study the use of talisman. And the diamond has also been associated with lightning. And sometimes it's believed to owe its origin to the thunderbolt. But this came from an Italian manuscript back in the 14th century, because I've been studying lately the different ancient uses of different stones. Now the Hindus, the Indians, they class diamonds in accordance to the four castes. And the Brahmin diamond, which was the big one, gave power, friends, riches, good luck. The Kshatriya diamond prevented the approach of old age, and the Visaya stone brought success in the, you know, and the Sudra was a stone that was used for good fortune. So, even though the ancients didn't know probably what we know today, I think on the use of talismans, they knew quite a bit about diamonds. Of course, we use the diamond in the receptor, and using the diamond in the receptor, we find that it definitely enhances the drive. It increases your spiritual drive. It increases your mental energy quite a bit. But it can also, because it's in the receptor, because when we use a gemstone in something like a receptor, it's going to amplify the power of it quite a bit. Just like the old breastplate that the priests wore in the ancient times to perform different rituals. They in these times would use these plates, which were oftentimes dissimilar metals, where they were like the orgone plated. But they weren't using the pyramids in those days because I don't think they really understood them, you know.
Dr. Bell, excuse me for interrupting, but we do have a phone call on the line. Would you like to take a call?
Sure, go ahead.
Let's go to right now line four, and we'll talk to Greg. Greg, good morning.
Good morning. Dr. Bell.
Yeah.
You know the Global 2000 report?
Right.
Do you know which section of it? There's three different sections. I called the federal department.
Right.
And they told me there was three specific sections of it, and I was wondering if there was one section in it particularly that had the information pertaining to the population, you know, and the environment statistics.
Well, I don't know of any particular section. I always use most of the time a volume one. The 21st century is the main.
Yeah, I'm really having a hard time hearing you. Jim, could you tell me what he said?
Yeah, volume one.
Oh, volume one?
Yeah, get volume one.
Okay.
That's the easiest one. That's the synopsis of the whole thing.
That's the synopsis?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Right. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
17 minutes now after the hour of 11 o'clock. This is Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Dr. Bell?
Okay, so anyway, the diamond had many uses. And, of course, diamonds, once they're discovered, like in the larger variety, they usually end up in museums or in private collections because they have had for thousands of years the energies that are really high in power. And realize the diamond is put together by pressure. And there are parts in the human body that record certain experiences. Just as in the vegetable kingdom, there are parts in the vegetable kingdom that record certain experiences. And if we study how the diamonds are formed, because, you know, it's quite interesting in the fact that, you know, back in the Pleistocene age and the Miocene age and all the older ages of the earth, when they had huge forms of vegetation, there was tremendous amounts of knowledge that was embedded in all these plants and animals, yet not to be discovered by consciousness. So as time went on, the earthquakes came and the volcanoes came, and basically it's like a huge plow. Everything was turned upside down and placed deep into the earth. And when this was put down deep into the earth, the pressures that were created were millions and millions of pounds of pressure per square inch. And there was tremendous heat along with this pressure on this vegetation, and it became crystallized and formed the diamond. And the diamond itself has, because it's gone through this process, the atoms and the electrons and the protons and all the electronic particles within the structure of the diamond itself have an imprint on them. And when this imprint is brought into a grid-like structure like the receptor, what happens is the imprint is then released into a form of energy that consciousness, living beings like ourselves, can reassimilate. And the some of the prime, because the diamond is a clear stone, and because of the way the diamond affects the flow of light and energy through it, it has a very direct, it's like a direct amplifier. It's very fast. It moves consciousness very quickly. Unless you're ready for that motion, it could be too intense over a period of time. So therefore, we'll tell people when they have that diamond receptor just to wear it sparingly, because it is very powerful. And if it gets you moving too quickly in consciousness, it'll serve no purpose other than it causes a form of confusion. So the diamond is one stone, I think, to be highly respected, although it is a pretty stone. Now the next one is the emerald. Now the emerald is the one, of course, that relates to the throat chakra or the thyroid gland. And the emerald, by the ancients, was a stone that was believed to foreshow future events. But we have not really learned whether the visions were actually seen in the stone, you know, as these legends were depicting it. But, or whether it was the power that was given or the Tao to the wearer. But definitely, the emerald was for the telling of the future, and it was also for mental clarity. And, one of the powers that was inherent in the stone, according to the ancient, is that if a person was a speaker, he wanted to become an eloquent speaker, for example, if he wore the emerald, it would give him clarity in his speech. And also, it supposedly will give you clarity in your thoughts, and it will strengthen the memory. And of course, the emerald was connected by a Cupid's bow, and of course, this energy was assigned to Venus. And I just saw the movie the other night called "Romancing the Stone." Did you see that one?
No, I have not seen that.
Okay, well, it's a heart. The stone is sort of a heart-shaped emerald, as far as I can tell. And remember, we've talked about the emerald laser that we use. Remember, as a matter of fact, I think I had it that night. We did that J-Fox thing in Long Beach a long time ago.
Yes.
The emerald has a tremendous releasing power. And because the emerald applies itself directly to the thyroid gland in the body, the thyroid gland is the gateway to consciousness to the lower part of the body. So you can have, God's infinite knowledge stored up in your subconscious. If your thyroid gland wasn't functioning and you could not release that energy from your head, your memory wouldn't function properly to your body, because if your memory can't reach the lowest part of your body, it has no purpose, because it's the flow of energy through the body, through the etheric part of the body, that gives us memory and gives us power. And of course, depending on how far back in memory you can reflect on, because it also has reflective, properties, because of some of the minerals that are in the emerald itself, it will strengthen the mind. And this, of course, is a process that can grow and grow. So it would be a stone that we could wear for an infinite period of time. Like, one of my favorite stones to wear is the emerald. I wear the emerald and the sapphire, but when I'm doing a lot of speaking, I didn't even know. From all my studies on the emerald, I did not know that the ancients had actually used it for the power of speaking, but I have oftentimes found myself, when I'm doing a lecture somewhere, wearing the emerald receptor. So the emerald is really a good stone. Also, the ancient scripts say that the emerald sharpens the wits and quickens the intelligence. And Cardano, which is an old ancient guy that wrote on stones, declares that it made people more honest. For dishonesty is nothing more than ignorance, stupidity, and ill nature. And so I think emerald is quite an interesting stone. It's one of my favorite stones. By the way, people, that if you want, those of you that are listening out there and want information on where I get some of my old knowledge on these stones, there's a really good book that was written, and it's available. I think I got this one at the boat I drew several years ago. It's on the Dover Press, and it was written by a guy by the name of George Frederick Kuntz. And George Frederick Kuntz was a guy that organized all the different gem exhibitions back at the turn of the century, the ones in Germany, the ones in England, all the different showings that they had. And he dedicated his book to a guy by the name of J.P. Morgan, who we have spoken about in his relationship to Nikola Tesla. J. Pierpont Morgan had one of the most beautiful stone collections a lot of these very powerful people, these powerful families that we've discussed on the show, have had and end up with the power of these tremendous gemstones because they respect them and use them in a way that, of course, amplifies their power. And I'm sure all of us would like to, because money is, and money and power are part of what we're trying to use to make a living in these times, are interested in how these people use these stones. And the fact is that they must have had something going for them, even if they, you know, because they ended up with these collections. So this book was published in 1913, so it was an old book then, and it's quite interesting. I highly recommend it as a form of reading. Now, another stone that we use in the receptor, which if you look at the little chart in the little booklet, and little booklets are available for $1, they're not very expensive, is the ruby. The ruby is one that has a limited time in wearing also. And the ruby has many names in Sanskrit, by the way, and Sanskrit is the world's oldest language. It's over 26,000 years. And some show, by these different names, show that the Hindus value this stone as one of the best ones. For instance, one of the names was called Ratraj, which means king of precious stones. And leader of precious stones was another name. And it was also considered the red lotus. And the ruby has a tremendous power in the fact that it's what I call a hot stone. And a hot stone will cause things in the body, whenever it gets around any kind of living life form, it will cause the highest form of that life form to begin vibration. And of course in the body, the highest form of energy in the body that I've been able to locate on the electrochemical levels is probably the action of the corticosteroid family or the cortisone family. Within that family is adrenaline. And when adrenaline is moving through the body, it gives us the feeling or power of physical energy, as well as if you're a person that's in low, has a low state of adrenaline, you might be arthritic, because arthritis usually is a disease that exists, when there is a low or corticosteroid flow in the body. As a matter of fact, in American medicine, they used to give the hormone shots, the corticosteroid family, in direct injections to people with arthritis because their energy was too low and the virus was congregating in the bones of the body. Now the Japanese, of course, were not fortunate enough to have rubies to combat this, but they were using copper because copper in the vibratory family falls into the ruby family also. So, of course, they came out with a copper bracelet. When we developed our pyramid research, we came out with a copper and gold-plated pyramid called the Fire Dome, which had a very similar vibratory characteristic as these bracelets, with the exception that because we were using the pyramid and the orgone plating of dissimilar metals, copper being one of several metals being used, we got a much more profound effect than these copper bracelets. And, of course, we used that with vitamin C to even cause even greater effect, because vitamin C also falls into that same vibratory family, and the fact that vitamin C is holding the cells together, the collagen in the cells, so it has a binding power as well as a dispelling power. It casts off things that don't belong in the collagen, things that are not inherent in the characteristic of a cell in the body. Vitamin C pushes them away, so it has a detoxifying characteristic. Well, when we go into the next stage from the metal, the orgone, the pyramid, into the receptor league, which was the, what I call a pyramid of the 80s, we went ahead and integrated the ruby. And with the ruby in there, of course, it gave it a lot more energy. So the ruby receptor has a tremendous, profound effect in the fact that we're using the pyramid, we're using the orgone plating, and the stone itself. And the stone is a very hot stone.
Dr. Bell, we are just about out of time today.
Well, we had fun. It was kind of quick today.
Well, it always is quick.
Yeah. Fast show around here.
Yes.
We have to get my time machine out and turn time back. Every 15 minutes, I'll reset time. How would that be?
Well, that would be an interesting way to make it stretch.
Yeah. So anyhow, if you want more information, people listening on the nuclear disc that we were talking about earlier, that give us a call at 714-499-2603 or write Dr. Bell, 891 Santa Ana Street in Laguna Beach, zip 92651.
Okay, and a reminder, we'll be back with more of Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Dr. Bell, have yourself a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The name is Excalibur. Excalibur, the world's finest nutritional supplement for the 80s that you've heard Dr. Fred Bell speak of so often, is now available to you at a super low price.
There we go.
Only $14.95.
That was
Excalibur
really good,
is a synergistically formulated supplement that took years to develop and guaranteed.
Yeah, that was the first part of that segment. Now we'll segue right on into it. How'd you guys like that show, huh? That was real interesting stuff. Those are some great old books that I used to read. Nothing wrong with those books, I'll tell you. We're going to segue right into the next show. We're going to go off topic here tonight, go into some other stuff. As I like doing off topic, it's always fun. You know, we've been putting a big push through the holidays on the receptor information, but now we're going to just take a little break and do something else. Talk about pyramid energy, you know, the old pyramid. And sorry we didn't give the 800 number out too good the other night. Don and I are still learning how to do all this because we've got so much to handle while we're doing these shows. And I just finished that, still working on a television special we were working on for the Discovery Channel. So we were a little busy. I was worn out. I've been filming for 6 or 8 hours. And we came on to a 2 more hour show. Plus, having a whole film crew in your house. And some of them smoked, and we had to smoke them outside, unsmoke outside, and then how it goes. As usual. Anyway, I think the Dr. Bell's probably queuing up now for another show, and we'll see here in about a second.
Man, you know.
Oh, here it is.
Got a very short.
I'll go for it. Make sure he's rewound. Don't want Dr. Bell starting too quick. I guess it just start. This one starts in a little bit. So, Dr. Bell, you want to hear some words?
Man, you know, the art science, which has got a very short attention span, really began to understand its real age.
Now, Dr. Bell, I've got to ask you a question. We talk about this. I guess he would be a star traveler.
Right.
Coming to this planet about 3100 BC.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking about the age of the Great Pyramid being around 75,000 years.
Right, exactly. And what there's definitely, you know, if you look at the sources of the dating processes that have been used, there is still no close communication. Everybody comes up with different
obviously
numbers.
We were talking about the Great Pyramid, so those are missed the first
even
part
though
of the show
it might have, let's say, came at a later time, it might have been a return.
About the Great Pyramid.
But this is the, there are,
where were you 20 years ago? Boy, you missed out.
Of the same occurrence with different datings. An earlier occurrence was a same area down in Mexico, always in Mexico City in that area. A guy by the name of Quetzalcoatl came. He came like 15,000 years ago and did approximately the same thing. So what I think is that, in the case, for example, of the Mayan calendar here, where they began to they started Mayan year with year one, which is on August 12th. I believe what really happened is that on the what they call year one is when some consciousness rose to some realization of some previous incident that had happened, and they established that from the point that they realized the happening. In other words, didn't mean that he came there then, but that's when their calendar started. That's kind of the feeling that I have. Because at a conservative estimate, I mean a really conservative estimate, the pyramids are over 5,000 years old. The Great Pyramid is.
Now, how do they do that dating, by the way? That's not carbon dating because of the stone involved. I don't think you can do carbon dating on stone, can you?
No, you can, but it isn't that accurate. They try. There are other forms of radiation decay, but one way that the pyramid was dated to be over 15,000 years ago, over 5,000 years old, is that on the side of it, there are distances of shells embedded in the rock that were not embedded in it when it was probably built, but came because of it being underwater for a time. So the deluge that Noah was involved in, where it rained and rained, was approximately 5,000 years ago, and here the pyramid has high water marks on it. So that was one way that historians were dating the Great Pyramid.
Now, wait a minute. The pyramid has high water marks on it?
Right. It has shells and different particles on it that indicated that it was underwater. I think, I have to look in my books, but I think it was underwater. About one-third of it was underwater at one point. Now, realize at this time it was probably sealed off and none of the water actually went inside of it. This information, by the way, is in Peter Tompkins' book. I don't know exactly what page it is, called the Secrets of the Great Pyramid, and he's a historian that did a tremendous amount of work on the, it's in other information too, but this is one source of information to that effect.
Well, that's certainly fascinating. It would also help document the Great Flood.
Right, it does. It does help document the Great Flood. Peter Tompkins, his comment on that was that, a lot of the major mountain ranges weren't underwater, but in fact, the pyramids in the area around the Nile River was, because, well, you know, that's pretty low anyway. I mean, it's not that high off sea level. As a matter of fact, pyramids representing the average height of the planet anyway in its own height. The other thing that's interesting that a lot of mythology and historians talk about is they say that the Great Pyramid was a Bible sealed in stone. And supposedly the last time it was ever used for initiatory rites was when Christ was initiated in it back a couple thousand years ago. Then it was sealed up at that point. And they also believe that in the second coming of the same person, or an energy field like him, or even a consciousness, that the capstone would be put back on the pyramid. They figured that somehow or other the capstone, which is missing supposedly now on the Great Pyramid, would be replaced, or something to that nature would happen. This was, of course, a lot of historians have read that, and it's been read into the legends too. So it gets into a lot of divine, there's a lot of divine information that's available, but one way that I used to explain it, because when we used to talk about pyramids or wear them a lot, certain religious groups would be offended by this. They figured that if you're wearing a pyramid on your head, that's satanic, you know. And this is what religion does. Religion has a tendency to call things satanic that they can't understand or are basically forms of ignorance to them. Ignorance will call things satanic because it's unique in the fact that it doesn't, you know, understand itself. And so the pyramid has to do with the Christ, but it doesn't have to do with the spirit. And that's where people get going too fast on that and get mixed up. You know, the pyramid is a principle of matter, you know, made flesh. And if you study that, it makes sense. Whereas Christ is the principle of flesh made into spirit. So, looking at the pyramid as a carbon atom, and realizing the carbon atom is what flesh is made from, and it takes the shape of the pyramid to make other atoms behave the way they do so that the carbon atom can become flesh. Without it, we wouldn't have these bodies. So, that makes sense. But then the flesh, once it's occupied by the soul, in order to become spiritualized or rise into higher realms for immortality purposes, has to seek the Christ principle. And of course, on this planet, it's represented by the Master Jesus. So, if you separate those two meanings out and very clearly reflect on them, it really takes away a lot of this sadism and Satanism that has been cast upon the pyramid by people not clearly separating the different principles. You know, there is no material thing that can make man into spirit, but the spirit uses materiality to experience other spirit, other parts, other aspects of spirit. So keeping it in that light makes a lot more sense. Now, the initiation that Christ took and other initiates took back several years ago utilized several of the passageways in the pyramid and some passageways that are not known or have not been rediscovered, and also the Sphinx. Now, if you go up to the Rosicrucian Museum up in San Jose, they have a very beautiful museum there, and they have a model in it showing their ideas of the hidden chambers between the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx. And according to the legend, the Sphinx, the initiate to go into the pyramid, went through the Sphinx first. And this is because the Sphinx is feminine. It symbolizes feminine energy. It's right close, it's much closer to the Nile River. And the principle of water, realize the Nile River is flowing backwards from most rivers north of the equator, which then symbolizes the inverse, characteristic of men and women. And so, and it also represents the Baptist, the water, the Baptist, and the Sphinx, and John the Baptist all represent the same thing. So before you go into the Christed state of initiation, you would go through the Sphinx first and initiate it. And the, you know, because the our age is it's symbolic now of our age, because women are becoming more powerful now. Again, actually, women have had power all along, equal with men. But the problem has been that men's egos have been, because of them being tuned into this earth vibration, this growth resistant vibration, their egos have blocked the spiritual progress that would manifest through the women. So, for that reason, the Sphinx has not been, the entrance ways has not been discovered yet, but they believe it's somewhere but down below the paws of the Sphinx. There have been some stairs discovered under there, but there's been no funds to excavate, more around the Sphinx, and there are some, the Egyptian government is not too, you know, they're a little bit reticent now to work on those two structures. But anyhow, once the initiate went inside the Great Pyramid, he was then taken downstairs. He didn't go upstairs first to the Queen's Chamber, the King's Chamber. He went down into a pit way down in the bottom, way underground. And here, he was given a large amount of poison, sufficient to kill, I would say, at least 50 ordinary individuals that had not prepared for this type of ceremony. This is what happened to Jesus. He also was given this poison. And it's symbolic also of a tribal thing that the American Indians here do in this country. If you remember the movie Billy Jack, where the warrior trained Billy Jack to go in the circle of rocks, in the circle of fire with the rattlesnakes, and allow himself to be bit many times, and then live through the experience if he could. Well, the kinds of areas that our Indians like, they always did this in sacred ground, meaning this was high, a mountain with a high astral state, where everything that was going to go on would be uninterrupted. And if you were to say that the Comanches and the Apaches were fighting each other as warring tribes, okay? If they were fighting themselves as warring tribes, what would happen is, even though they were in the middle of war, they would not, either tribe, violate the sacred meaning of these burial grounds or initiatory grounds. Sometimes tribes shared this area. The pyramid was also a sanctified area. And for people performing these rites, they always did it in sanctified areas. Once the initiate was given this poison, then what happens is he would probably, for about 3 days and three nights, go into mass convulsions and hallucinations. And during this time, his spirit would be elevated to such a high state that he could see all of his lifetimes and all of his mistakes and confront them one by one. In the account of Jesus' experience in the Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ, it talks about these temptations, these people, these tempters that came in, tried to trick him, told him that, you know, he was being deceived by the different priests that had put him in there in the first place, that he was going to be sealed up in this thing. They were testing his faith in the actual, you know, attainment that he was looking for at that time. And what the reason was for him to do that in the first place was that in those days, as they are today, in order to rise in consciousness, he had to be confident that he was as powerful as any man. And there were many men in those days that were prophets, like himself. And so this is what was kind of an identity, was a personality identity crisis that he was going through. After 3 days went by in this particular chamber that he was in, then what happens is, and you got to realize the energy down below the pyramid, it's not the same as the pyramid energy above it. The pyramid below, the energy below the pyramid is a feminine energy, and it's the same energy that, remember, in the seminar we took the pyramid and we put it upside down on people and tested them and they got weak. It's not that it's making you physically weak, but it's making you, your spiritual energies is moving up into higher centers, so your physical body doesn't have the amount of electricity in it because it's being transmuted back into the etheric level. So this is all taking place at the bottom of the pyramid. Then what happens is, if the initiate survived this ordeal and didn't succumb to some temptation of fate, then what happens is he would begin to go up the corridors of the pyramid, up through the grand gallery, up into the king's chamber, and on arrival of the king's chamber would spend approximately 7 more days in the Great Pyramid. And this was a 10-day ceremony. When Christ got to the queen's chamber and was in that part, he was being prepared to go into the king's chamber. Different tempters were still coming, but the temptations were different, of different nature. Now, they were not evil. They were more like euphoric temptations. And in one accounting, for example, this beautiful minstrel came, was like an angel, and she supposedly was like an incarnation of Aphrodite. And the temptation that she made to him wasn't one that she was making an accusation that he should go and run away from the priest of the temple or himself. Hers was one like, you know, I would love to be married to you. We you know, and Christ was very romantically inclined to her energy. She's like saying to him, she would like to spend her life and they could build a family. And in this form of temptation, he resisted by saying that I would love to have this kind of relationship with you, but however, I'm here for God and I have to do God's work in this lifetime. In another lifetime, that can maybe be. So they weren't negative things. They were temptations of the ego, you might say, of a positive nature. This happened in the Queen's Chamber. In the book by Levi, slightly misinterpreted, they try to say that he had that experience in the temple in Heliopolis, but that's not true. It happened in the Queen's Chamber in the Great Pyramid, because he spent some time in there. And then when he got up to the King's Chamber, then the energy fields are tremendous up there, and things that you really couldn't talk about on a radio show begin to happen, and he had some very high experiences in the coffer. See, the coffer was the astral travel chamber that they used. But anyway, he went through that ceremony and then was released from the pyramid, and then his time was finished in Egypt. Well, other kings had come along and built other pyramids by this time, even before Christ took the initiation in the pyramid. Another pyramid next to it belonged to another one of the masters, and he was the guy that his name was Lord Khepran. And Khepran actually prostituted his daughter, because that one was built by slaves. It's an inferior pyramid to the Great Pyramid, but sits right there on the complex. And he actually, according to legend, prostituted his daughter for great sums of money to pay for the parts and materials and that to build the Great Pyramid. So the pyramid that he had, and that pyramid, because he believed that that if he had his own pyramid, then he could be immortal like other people, other masters had reached supposedly immortality in the initiation processes in the Great Pyramid. So that's how the pyramid number 2 came into being. Also during this time, there was a Merlin involved. His name was Maricenus. And he was he wasn't a king, but he was a magician. And he was very much into the energy. And he, when he came into his own power, he was never like the king of Egypt, but when he came into his own power, he built a small pyramid for himself, and that was the third pyramid that was built. And those are the three in the complex. Then there were other pyramids. There was another about a dozen more that are scattered around in the near area. Some of them were finished, some of them were never finished. There's one for Zozara. There's one called the Ben Pyramid. These are all pyramids that were typically built by slaves, but by now the high consciousness and the master science had already left Egypt, which still hasn't been there in centuries. So everything else was a basic degradation of the technology of the Great Pyramid being manifested by ignorant people, you know, to the best of their abilities. So that's sort of like the story of how the pyramids in Egypt came to be. There are other pyramids in the world that were used similarly, some down in Mexico, some in South America. The Pyramid of the Moon, for example, down in Mexico is very much like the Pyramid of the Sun, with the exception, I mean, it's smaller, but it's called the Venusian Pyramid, and it has timetables in it that refer to the rotational rate of Venus, which was recorded at 288 days and recorded in stone before our satellites actually discovered that Venus does in fact rotate at the rate of 288 days per year. It showed that the planet Venus had 5/8 the mass of the Earth, and Venus being representative of female energy, the female is typically about 5/8 the mass of the male, so in size. So all these other similarities go on. When the sun goes down on the pyramid in Egypt, it rises on the pyramid of the moon in Mexico, because that pyramid is also called the Pyramid of the Moon.
They wound that show down. It was kind of a great show. I remember that one very well. Good old days when I really did the pyramid statistics. And it's interesting because the Venus does relate in proportion to the Earth as the mass of the female. So it begins to give you a little bit of the divine proportions of the way our solar system is set up. And It's real interesting when I studied the initiations of Jesus in the Great Pyramid, and I began to realize that that energy, that initiatory energy, was present in all of the different pyramid structures that exist. It goes right down into the carbon atom of the body, which we were talking about on the show the other night. And when you start looking at the carbon atom of the body, you realize that as we move around the Pleiades, 26,827.5 years to these different ages or epochs that we're going through, the awareness, the integrity, the actual structure of the carbon atom within the body, the iron atom within the blood, the heme, actually changes. It's actually changing right now. And unfortunately, with all the pollution that man is doing, it's changing the wrong way. That's another thing that the induced forces of the Great Pyramid and our pyramids and the nuclear receptor do. Nuclear receptor was much cleverer way to bring it into the consciousness of our bodies. It's kind of almost like ambushing the cells, but it's what it needs, because that's what the pollution does. If you put a receptor on everybody, I'm sure in the whole world, we wouldn't have any more problems. But there are some people that will fiercely resist any form of pyramidal type life force frequencies near their body. They'll either make fun of it, they'll run from it, they'll attack it. I remember one time I was in a Denver airport and I was waiting to catch a plane. I had a gold power dome on, and some guy ran up and grabbed it right off my head and went running down the aisles of the Denver airport, screaming from the old airport, not the new one, screaming at the top of his lungs, "Tools of the devil, tools of the devil. They must go, they must go." This guy was mad, and he was a guy that was there to catch a plane. The pyramid just set him off. So it resonates different ways in the human body. That's why the other night when I was talking about the amethyst, when you're going through relationship changes or life adjustments, serious life adjustments, even if you're maybe wearing a diamond, you might have to go back to that amethyst to reset your aura frequencies. It's very important. So anyway, those of you that are out there that don't know our numbers, seems like sometimes you are. In the continental United States, east and west of the Rockies, 1-800-729-2603. This will also work for Hawaii, and this will also work for Alaska. And it will work for the Canadians. But you must say A before you dial. And the number for overseas clients is country code 1-949-499-2603. That's 1-949-499-2603. And you'll have to go to blog and service for these shows to get the call-in numbers. We have new call-in numbers for the show, and I guess the other night, we apologized for that, Don and I both. We sort of forgot to give out the 800 numbers. That's what happens when you've been up doing media work for 16 hours straight. You're a little tired, and I think he was too. He's been hosting all the shows on his thing all day long, and I was doing the television and all the stuff here all night long and day long. So we were a little bit burned out. So anyway, I'm going to bring Holly back up. I think she wants to close out the show, and that's going to be great. So a little bit more of Holly Penfield as we close out. We look forward to seeing you, I guess, Saturday night. We've been called back again. I had no plans to do the show again Saturday night. Absolutely none. But I need a night off. But so many emails, so many calls, so many disgruntled listeners because they couldn't call in because they didn't have the number. You're torturing Dr. Bell, but he loves it. Anyway, Holly, are you going to bring us off the air here and get us going? What are you going to do? Holly, come on now. I guess you're going to do it for us. Thank God. So we'll look forward till the next time. Have a great health, science, and energy evening from Dr. Fred Bell.
I like the light of love for you tonight. You have been listening to BBS Radio, a Bloggins.com production and a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.